And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of Friday the 13th of September. And we're happy to be joined by our co-host, who always brings good luck and humor, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well, thank you. I hope I can override Friday the 13th luck.
I'm sure you will. So, Mariah, there's a story that has gone from, I don't know, they would say sublime to the ridiculous, but it started out as ridiculous and has gone to meaning deeper and deeper things. It has to do with Hurricane Dorian. I bet everyone knows what I'm talking about. Hurricane Dorian, when it was being tracked over, it was Hurricane Dorian seemed like it was around for weeks, if not months. It was a long, long time. It was very unstable in its tracks. Some of the early tracks suggested that the hurricane might actually cross the Florida Peninsula into the Gulf of Mexico, which would then let it hit the Gulf Coast. Right? But that soon settled down, and consistently for several days, reports said that the hurricane would turn northward, go through Florida, hit the east coast of the United States, blah, 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 blah. At some point, the man who occupies our White House put out a tweet saying that Alabama was at risk and was going to be hit, had the risk to be hit much harder than previously thought or something. Right, Mariah? Correct me if I get any of my facts wrong. I certainly don't want to be any fake news. Anyway, the guy, the president sends out a tweet that's factually incorrect. And instead of saying, oops, my bad, he let it stand. A few hours later, because of the potential for confusion, the actual, literal risk of confusion of honest-to-God people in Alabama, the Alabama Office of the National Weather Service put out a tweet saying that no, Hurricane Dorian is not a threat to Alabama. Please don't worry. All right. So there you go. And that was all funny for a while, right? A couple days later, and I'm getting my stories mixed up here, a couple days later, the president took his Sharpie and drew on a hurricane map, defacing a federal weather forecast, which is a crime, showing somehow that this bubble extended into Alabama, right?
And worse than that, not only did he draw on an official weather map, which, as you say, is a crime punishable by, a couple months in jail, but he used an old map. So it was actually an outdated map showing the hurricane hitting Florida. So he also put a little bit of panic into Floridians who had been under the impression that they were going to avoid the, major brunt of the storm. And all of a sudden, he's showing them an outdated map, which shows the hurricane tracking right over their state, which is not the case. So there's a double whammy there. He both scared Alabamians and sort of confused Floridians on top of that.
And so he continued to insist that his tweets, he was insisting that his tweets were in fact correct, that he was right all along about Alabama. So blah, blah, blah. Everyone laughs and jokes about Sharpiegate. Come last Friday, the story took, to my mind, a darker turn, right? Last Friday, the National Weather Service put out, Friday evening, right? It was like 9 o'clock Friday night last week. And National Weather Service put out a press release basically reprimanding the Alabama office for contradicting the president, right? And that there was a risk, and at least I think they said there was a risk, but at least they reprimanded the Alabama scientists in Alabama for challenging what the president said in a tweet. Okay, so that's bad enough, and that carried a whole lot of reaction from scientists and whatnot all around the world. But then things kept getting darker. It turned out that Wilbur Ross, who's the Secretary of the Commerce in the cabinet, had said that he would fire people at NOAA if they didn't put out that press release basically reprimanding the Florida field office. And then it went even farther up the chain of command.
Alabama.
And then finally, the most recent thing is that whoever the guy who's the chief of staff for Trump, I forget his name, but it was Trump's.
Mulvaney.
Mulvaney, Trump's guy, was the one that told Ross to tell Noah, to tell the people in Alabama to shape up or ship out. And that is just, I mean, that's pretty horrifying. That has real, that has implications, it seems to me, all over the place. All right. So tell me, have I got the story more or less right? Is there anything you're going to, you would add or before, I don't know.
I wish that what you were saying was fiction, right? I wish that this wasn't the reality. I mean, you know, like many things with this administration, sometimes it's like they're silly and it seems like a waste of time, you know, for us, the nation, to be spending talking about it and reacting to his tweets. And it's certainly a big vacuum suck of the media's energy. But when you take a step back, I mean, this stuff is very serious. First of all, the whole time he's been carrying on what this is, I think, going on 9 days, he's been carrying on about this Alabama, I'm right, you know, it really was going to hit Alabama. And in the meantime, you've got Bahama is devastated, right?
Yeah. You
have, and there is still devastation that's hitting. I mean, our coast is still dealing with some of the devastation. There's a lot of issues associated with that. You know, the president said he skipped out on the World War II commemoration in Europe because he had to, you know, help with the hurricane efforts here. Yeah. And instead he's been spending all of his time, I think, golfing and then wreaking havoc with this Twitter storm that's been happening. Certainly not helping with hurricane response in any way. So, you know, there's all that, just the fact that he's being an ineffective leader. But then you couple it with what you're talking about, this, you know, autocratic thing that's happening, where you've got Ross saying, no, we're not going to tell the truth. We're going to do what's politically, you know, best for us at the expense of people's safety and people's, you know, livelihood. And, you know, in this situation, okay, so maybe some people from Alabama thought the hurricane was going to hit them and they went out and bought some extra food and some extra water. But if it was a situation that was reversed, where he'd said, no, the hurricane's not going to hit Alabama, and then it did hit Alabama, that's a much more serious situation. And, you know, who's
it could
to
happen.
Say?
Who's to say?
It
yeah,
could
it wouldn't happen.
Happen.
Yeah.
And
I mean, my thought is that that these things have implications in the sense that I know it's not the Commerce Department that puts out labor statistics, but, you know, if the labor statistics, I mean, that's probably Department of Labor, right, that does that. But I mean, if Trump thinks that doesn't like a number that's coming and wants to change it and pretend it's not real, well, there you go. He has set a precedent that he can countermand and change actual facts, right?
Well, yeah. So, but the one thing that the Department of Commerce does cover is the census, right?
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So if, you know, if Ross decided that he wants to tell census officials to be dishonest about the results, you're talking about, you know, the census is how we how money gets distributed to all of the different states, and how we appoint, you know, how many seats each state has in the House of Representatives.
Yep.
So if Trump decides, no, I want, you know, certain states to have less of a population, well, there you go, right? Yeah. I mean, so.
And the fact that his cabinet is compliant in these things is evidence of the sort of the creeping authoritarianism that Trump has brought in. Trump's not smart enough to have a plan to do this, but it's just the mode of operation and the people that he hangs around with. This is how these guys roll.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna have to start calling him the bully in chief.
I mean, I think it's entirely too frightening to say that if Trump thinks he can change a weather report, he can also change, you know, election results, right? If he decides that his mandate is that he's going to change these numbers, it's not a good thing, and it goes way beyond the specifics of the case, right? This is this thing about the National Weather Service is just an example of what they think they can do. And, of course, it goes without saying that all of this stuff has already happened to climate work, right? We're talking about this in a climate show because the science of climate change has been basically neutered by these guys over the course of the last 2 years. And it's a bad thing.
Well, and, you know, of course, the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, they do a lot of the climate modeling. They report on a lot of the climate data. And I have confidence in Noah. I know that the let's see, I can't remember his name, but the sort of director of Noah said this is like unacceptable and pushed back on Ross publicly. Let's see, his name's Craig McLean. He's the acting chief scientist, and he said this is inappropriately, you know, that Friday's his agency's Friday press release inappropriately and incorrectly contradicted the NWS forecaster. So, you know, it's good. We can hope that the chief scientist there is going to stay true to facts and hopefully climate data, because at least he wants to stay true to weather data. So.
I mean, all these guys, when they're faced with a choice, do they keep their job, put their kids in college, put food on the table, stay in their home, and fudge the forecast a little bit for Wilbur Ross, or do they stand on principle? I mean, it becomes a very high test and an extreme challenge for people to resist, these mid-level people to resist the pressure from the boss. And I mean, look at what's happening in the Department of Justice, right? William Barr is basically corrupting the whole thing, and it seems to me that many parts of the Justice Department are rolling over to what they want to do because of the pressure. And in some sense, I mean, you wish people were noble and would throw themselves on their swords to save things, but everybody's got to eat.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, the we've there's a Vox article that talks about the situation, and they sort of say that, you know, these kinds of threats are reminiscent of the behavior of strong men that Trump is quick to admire, right? Like the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un and the Russian president Vladimir Putin, he's often complimenting them on their styles of leadership. And of course, their, you know, styles of leadership are certainly harsher, right? At best, they're jailed if they disagree, right?
Harsh is a very kind word. You're
It's a
very
kind word,
sweet.
yeah. But, you know, like threatening to pe fire people because somebody has corrected you and you're doing it in the interest of, you know, trying to protect the public safety. That's not something that's done in healthy democracies. I mean, that's a very sick, it's a very big sign of a sick
Serious
democracy.
problem. No, I agree. I agree. And I think that the I mean, one of the other indicators that we will look back at in days in the future, assuming we get rid of Trump, when we look back at this awful time, is I think you mentioned it before, the harsh and unforgivable treatment of the people from the Bahamas trying to get into the United States for safety. And there was a story that I saw that there were, up until now, the practice has been that you can go between the Bahamas and the United States if you have, let's see, what is it? A
You don't need a
passport,
visa.
right, and like some sort of police documentation that you're a citizen of the Bahamas or something, right?
Right,
And,
you don't need a visa.
right, you don't need a visa. And as hundreds of people were on this boat to leave Bahamas to come to Florida, all of a sudden they were turned around, all thrown off, or some subset of them was thrown off because they didn't have visas. And then Trump goes on TV and talks about the scary drug deals from the Bahamas that are, Bahamas have been a
Yeah.
horrible hotspot of drug dealing, all these years. We've all talked about them, El Chapo out of Bahamas or something. It's just outright racism on the part of Trump, and it's horrific. And it's right up there with, people keep mentioning the ship of Jewish refugees that was turned away in 1939, right? This is the same thing. And it's happening in real time on our watch.
Yeah, I mean, so it's, I guess there's 70,000 Bahamians that are in need of food and shelter, and this is like they've always been able to come to the United States as a safe haven. And so, you know, here are these people suffering. They've just gone through a Category 5 hurricane. They've like watched loved ones die. They've watched their homes, their towns, everything they knew be flattened. And now all of a sudden they're desperately seeking help, and they can't leave. They can't go to what their backup plan was, because, you know, our president, our bully in chief, has said that very bad people might be trying to exploit this disaster. I mean, it's disillusioned, but it's also just a very dangerous mindset.
I mean, I think the Bahamians that are now clear climate change victims. I don't know if you can call them refugees, what the right word is, but the fact that that storm sat for 3 days over their island is a sign of climate change. They have suffered greatly, and there's no help coming in from the United States, and in fact, there's antagonism. It's not a good thing.
The WBUR article that talks about this story basically says that we have to make sure our climate plan includes a humanitarian immigration policy, because there will be many refugees in similar situations going forward. I mean, I think at one point they said tens of millions, right? I mean,
it's coming.
And we have to make sure that we're doing this in a way that is, you know, gives heed to the fact that we're a human civilization and that we are, you know, empathetic and kind, caring people who, you know, want to not just be completely 100% self-interested.
You're completely right, Mariah. I think what we'll do is we'll put down our discussion at that point, because that is a good call to action. We have to have a humane policy in the face of the coming disruptions. So what we'll do is we'll put up links to these various stories on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find this podcast, as you probably know, on our Facebook page. It's @massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, etc., etc. Almost all of the major podcast distribution applications. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can send us an email telling us what you think about the show, what you'd like to hear about, to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. It's always useful. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next 10 years under a plan that is equitable and just, that uses investments, regulation, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.